Welcome to another episode of the RAG podcast. And for those of you who don't know, the RAG stands for Recruitment Agency Growth. Since early 2019, I've been interviewing the most successful and innovative recruitment owners to learn how they rose to the top of their game. In season 7, I'm going to be having raw, authentic, and insightful conversations with agency owners, entrepreneurs, leaders, people across the industry. And I want to be learning about their ambitions, what's happening behind the scenes in their agencies today, and their plans to navigate difficult market conditions. I'll be bringing you the latest and greatest recruitment stories every single week on Wednesdays at noon across multiple platforms. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the RAG podcast. On this week's show, I'm super excited to be joined by Oliver Legg, the co-founder of Aspiron Search, a specialist headhunter in the cybersecurity market, operating from the UK, but placing people all over the US. What I love about this episode is we tell the story of Oliver going from regional sales manager for a home security installation company 7 years ago to his journey as a recruiter and a top biller in the business to launching his own agency in the pandemic, thinking, what have I got to lose? And then now almost three years in, generating over £1 million a year with a team of five, doing it in a modern way. Their podcast alone last year made them $320,000 in net fee income, and it's only going one way. So if you're looking at growing your business or launching your own business and you want to hear from someone who didn't start too long ago but is having an amazing journey, then you got to listen to this. Without further ado, Oliver, welcome to the RAG podcast.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me on, Sean, after a few months of trying to get it in.
Mate, I think we started conversations in, was it October, November last year or something to do this? It took about 3-4 months.
House move, new dogs, office move, all got in the way. But no, good to be here.
Throwing my baby in the mix as well, and we've all had it all to deal with. So look, no worries, mate, no pressure, but we better make this good. All right, people are going to be listening now, thinking this better be good. So, thanks so much for taking the time. I've done a brief introduction, Ollie, but I can't do it justice, right? So do me a favor, before we tell the story, just give us the bird's eye view of Aspiron today. Like, what are you guys are, how many people, locations, that kind of stuff, and then we'll tell the story.
Yeah, sure. So Aspiron is a UK-based cybersecurity search business. So we, although we're UK-based, solely focused on the Northern American market, we are 5 people right now, very soon to be 7. Relocated down to the sunny south coast down in Bournemouth.
So you, 5 people, soon to be 7, all in Bournemouth?
No, so 2 of those are pretty much fully remote. And then one of them is going to be like 2 days a week in the office. So right. Yeah, we're kind of working out how to run a half office-based, half remote business. But it's been going okay for the last, 6 months since we started doing that?
It's definitely a challenge that I see across the industry, this hybrid way of working. I think one thing about my business, Hoxo, is that we just went remote and we stuck to it, which I think's been easier. It's a bit like if you stayed in the office. I think when you commit to one thing, you are. But when you're trying to balance it, it's challenging. We'll get into that. So, Ollie, tell me about your journey getting into recruitment, because you recruit security and you had a bit of a play in the security market. It wasn't quite the same as what you recruit, I don't think, but you started life, was it knocking on doors and selling security to home installations or something?
Yeah, I was selling home security alarms for about 4 years. So yeah, I didn't go to university, finished sixth form, was working part-time at as a waiter in a hotel restaurant. And I remember I had 2 options, actually. I had an offer to go and work with my best mate at the time in insurance. And it was like 15K salary, which was more than I was earning as a part-time waiter at the time. And then there was this like slightly peculiar offer to be a commission-only on-the-road salesperson. And I was like, I'll take the chance. They've promised the ability to earn a grand a week on average. I was like, well, at 19, living at home, I can take the risk.
Yeah.
It was a bit odd. It was
What was the company called? Was it the Cobra Group?
No, it was called My Home.
I joined a very similar business straight out of uni that was selling charities door to door, but it was part of a wider, it was like the Cobra Group had like 1,000 different entities all over the country in energy and utilities and security and charities. So it's probably a similar, was it a bit like a pyramid scheme type concept?
Yeah, kind of. It was like on the day appointments, and you'd go to an appointment that was preset, but they didn't necessarily want you there. So, but no, it was good.
Someone would book the appointment on the phone and they'd know you were coming.
Yeah, so it was like a semi-warm lead, and then our job is basically to, within the space of 2-3 hours, walk out with anywhere between like $1,000 to $7,000 order. Do like 3 appointments a day, driving all over the southeast, getting home at like 1-2 a.m. in the morning sometimes. But no, it was good. Yeah, 4 years of that, you definitely learn the art of getting over rejection. And
was it life on the road, like David Brent style, eating pasties on the side of a motorway?
Yeah, acoustic guitar in the back as well. So no, it was good though. It was definitely kind of set the tone for like some form of sales career.
And how did you perform in that job? And what was the commission like?
Yeah, it was good. It was commission only, so you'd get 50 quid a week to cover your fuel. Other than that, it was pure commission. If you sold a £7,000 deal, then you get paid the best part of £1,000 2 weeks later. So it was good. Yeah, I was like 19, earning like 60-70k a year straight out of school. So it was it was good fun. It was a laugh as well. But
I actually interviewed for a job doing very similar. I don't know if it was like windows. I think it was more like patio doors or something. But it was in Doncaster. You get a car. Very similar.
Have you seen White Girl? Knocking on
door. Is that a TV show or a film?
Yeah, about double glazing salesmen back in like the
1980s. I haven't seen it. Is it good?
Yeah, it's on iPlayer. It's like really, really similar to that. It was good.
So what made you stop doing that? If you're making that kind of money at 19 and you did it till you're 23, what was the story there? How did you? Why would you change a 60, 70K a job at that age?
It was just never going to be more than that. It got like a little bit dull, and there was definitely an itch to do something different. And I wanted to work in the city. I knew that, but wasn't really sure what. And I applied for and interviewed for what I thought was like a broker job of some sort. And then got interviewed in person by, it was a rec thing, they were called Buchanan Search.
Buchanan Search, yeah.
Yeah, and then kind of asked in the interview, I was like, what am I actually interviewing for here? And he said, it's a recruitment consultant role. And then, yeah, he got me in front of 4 firms within like 2-3 days, met all four, was immediately drawn to a company called Iceberg, who were at the time like a five, six person firm, focused on the security markets. Loved the idea that they were startup and early and in something I didn't know anything about and what felt like quite a cool market. So joined there about 3 weeks later.
Did you think security was going to be what you knew, or did you realize really quickly?
I had no idea. no idea at all. I just thought cybersecurity sounds great. Sounds interesting. Let's go into this. The other firms were like finance or legal. So there was Hamlin Williams was one of them that was in their finance team. And then the other one was Tech Systems. So, and then Radley James. But the comparison between like a really small startup compared to those more established firms was, that's what I was drawn towards.
Where were you living at the time?
Near East Grinstead. So like Gatwick, Crawley Way.
Gatwick. So you traveled into London every day?
Yeah, it was a bit of a beast of a commute. It was like 1.40 hours each way. So that was, I'm glad not to do that anymore.
Were you living at home still, or were you out like on your
own? No, I had our own place with my now wife. So yeah, it was, we managed to get a place when we were doing the alarms.
So did she work in the alarms as well?
Oh no, she's a teacher.
Right. But you've been together since, so she's seen your whole journey and your whole career. That's awesome.
Yeah, since we were 16. We met on the first day of sixth form. And now we're married, 2 kids, 2 dogs. So, yeah, we've been through a journey over the last, 14 years.
Mate, big day tomorrow for you, Valentine's. You got to make it special. 14th of the month on the 14th year or whatever. You got to make
Valentine's
it.
Valentine's fizzles out after after that over a decade.
I took my wife for dinner on Friday night, and then because we've got the kids and stuff, I'm going to go and do something on Friday night again. But this week, I think I'll just get her some flowers and things. We'll have a nice day. But yeah, I know what you mean. Still try and make it special. I think you should. So. Take me back to this iceberg role then. So you joined them at 24. You've got 4 years sales experience, 23, 24. What was it like?
It was good. It was definitely a culture shock though. Like going from doing three appointments today, driving around, having your own kind of spare time to then being in this like really intense, 10-hour working day where it was non-stop start to finish. It was definitely a culture shock, but yeah, loved it. Loved being able to just kind of go around and meet people as much as possible. And yeah, pre-COVID days, just being out walking the streets of London, getting in front of people. Tom, who's the founder of Iceberg, he literally said, as soon as you go out and do a 360 placement, we'll promote you from a resourcer into a consultant role on the full commission. So I was like, right, game face, that's the aim. So yeah, managed to do that in 3 months with a 15K placement at BDO, so one of the large advisory firms. And it was a tough first year though. Going from doing consistently decent earnings in the alarm sales to then being on a 22K base salary, the commission taking way, way, way longer to actually get banked. There were definitely some moments where I was like, I kind of have to leave because we were spending about 1,200 quid a month from our savings just to pay the bills, because it was like a 70% pay drop in the first year. So yeah, there were definitely some moments, but I saw the potential of it. I was like, no, as long as we can stick it out for a few more months, and it will come good.
What was it? Was the cyber firms in London? So you were able to book like the old school, give them a call, book a meeting, try and get in front of them. That kind of, was that the style of how you worked?
So it was more placing technical security people at enterprise businesses. So we used to do a lot in law firms. We then did quite a lot in consultancies. There were some financial service things, and then just general, mid-market businesses and above, really. So obviously London is absolutely full of that. So yeah, it was just I do now that we purely focus on the US market, I definitely miss that ability to be out on coffees 4 or 5 times a day and just know that some of them are going to convert into clients. So
yeah,
it's,
that's how I used to work.
It's exactly, yeah, and it's changed now.
I loved it. It was like I used to go to Lednor Market and around the gherkin, and every insurance company's there, and just literally I could do 5, 6, 7 meetings a day. And like you say, they would convert because a couple would be candidates you're representing, others would be clients you're trying to get roles on, or you're already working a role and you're giving them an update. It was brilliant. So how did your career progress from getting promoted in 3 months? How did you then go up the ranks in that business, and what sort of responsibilities did you take on?
Yeah, so the progression was really, really rapid for about 12 to 18 months. There were quite a few little pay increases with base, and then there was the kind of pretty within the first 6 months kind of being able to start mentoring the incoming resources and helping them learn the ropes. And there'd been kind of elements of training and leading teams in the other sales job, so there was already a little bit of management experience there. Enjoyed that. I wouldn't class it as an official billing manager role, but that kind of having up to three resources and consultants, and then obviously still having your own number to hit as well. And then, yeah, it just started to, well, COVID hit, which was, we were actually out in New York on a work trip, 5th of March, I think we flew out, 2020. So
wow,
2 weeks before global lockdown. And that was a good trip, but a lot of the stuff that we were hoping would come from it didn't, because of what then happened. But yeah, that was kind of a catalyst for realizing that actually this isn't the right place anymore. And you kind of sat at home, still doing all right numbers during COVID and what in 2022, but just having that feeling of like, all I really feel I'm getting provided now by the company is a LinkedIn license and a fairly unknown brand. And just thinking that there's definitely a way to kind of channel efforts into something a bit more lucrative.
What sort of earnings and billings did you do as a consultant there? Because I want to know, just because you said 60-70k as a 19-year-old was impressive. How did that then transform when you went into recruitment and actually became good at it?
Yeah, so I joined in beginning of March 2017 is when I first got into Iceberg. First year was like early 40s in earnings, and then year two was, I remember exactly because it was so close to the magic six figures that everyone aims for when they're getting into it. But it was 249,000 in billings, and then 98,200 in PAYE earnings. And then year two was just over 300 in billings, which I never deemed as being like jaw dropping. It was good in comparison to what the business was, but my now co-founder Joe, we were always just kind of bouncing between the one and two spot, but it was only in a 6-7 person business. So
yeah, but you're still making over six figures, right? So you've gone and professionalized your job a little bit more, solidified it, I suppose. It's a bit different than just getting in a car and commission only like that. I do think that'd be a bit demoralizing over a period of time. And then now you're dealing with people across the city, you've got a client base, and you're making over six figures. It's pretty cool. So Joe, what was Joe's role? Was he billing the exact same stuff as you in terms of same roles? Was he contract you? How did you split it up?
Yeah, it was really similar. So we were 99% perm. There was literally like a handful of contract deals that got done. Joe focused a lot on something called like the OT security space, like industrial cybersecurity. So really cool stuff. So like protecting like power plants and like water treatment facilities and wind turbines from getting hacked. So really, really cool stuff. So he developed a really good niche there. And then I was doing a lot of legal technology, which kind of stemmed from doing forensics, which stemmed from cybersecurity. So there was quite a lot of that. And then a lot of, what they call like offensive security. So actual kind of legal hacking, essentially. So testing and then breaking company systems. So yeah, it was in interesting stuff.
Oh, and then, so you get to the pandemic, you go to New York. Did you struggle getting back from New York at that time? Or was it like panic stations get to the airport?
No, it was like 2 weeks before the UK's lockdown happened. So there was no issues getting back, but there was a couple of offices that were saying, oh, we're not taking international travelers, people that have traveled internationally into our office buildings. So there was definitely like something in the air.
Yeah, I remember that 2 weeks really well, because we had our third birthday is at Hoxo. We had one of my team had just been to Italy the day before, and he got back the day before, and we didn't let him come to the party. And he was like, he sent us like this massive list of reasons why, you know, the World Health Organization said he should be there and all this stuff. And we were like, we didn't think it was this major problem, but we were like, you know what, we're just taking advice and we think it's best you don't come. And then Italy was
the epicenter.
Yeah,
of it,
that was so. The one. And then I was on the RAG podcast with people. And if you listen back to an episode I did with Ben Alexander, which was horrific, just before. I mean, I'm like talking about it as if it's going to be like 2 weeks off. Mm-hmm. But it's funny how like we had no idea what to expect. So you get home, you get locked down, and that changed the way you thought. And how did it come about, you and Joe? Like, what was the conversation there?
Joe had been on at me for ages. He was like, I'm just waiting for you to say, let's do it. Let's go. And I never... Pre-COVID, I never wanted to start up. So I saw myself very long term at Iceberg, and just kind of seeing where that business was going to go. And there are a few things that happened. The I think just it was basically just being sat at home, not really having much involvement with the team because things weren't being brought together, and just thinking this just isn't right anymore, and it's not the way we want to be recruiting. And we found out that we were expecting my daughter, thinking back then to the 3 hours of commuting each day, I was just like, there's no way I can do that when we're starting our own family at the time. And it was a pretty definitive moment. I won't go into it on this, but yeah. I remember calling Joe and just being like, yeah, let's go, let's do it.
So when was it? Can you remember when that was? What month or?
It was the very end of September 2021. And then we started putting things in motion, and then we officially launched 15th of June 2022. So my daughter was born in January. I feel a bit obviously bad, but resigned after my biggest commission slip on the day, and then took it was about 3.5 months off. Enjoyed that with our family of three. And then went fully into it.
Was this your first child or your second?
Yeah. This is my daughter, number one.
That sounds like, I mean, look, I quit on a day I got commissioned. I think it's just the way the industry works, right? You're going to get guarantee what you got to get, and you've got to go. And our bosses who started the agency probably did the same thing before, and it's just the way it works. But I wouldn't feel guilty over it. It'll happen to you one day if it hasn't already.
Yeah, I'm sure it will.
It will. It just inevitably does. So where did the name Aspiron come from?
So it stems from the Latin, like a variation of the Latin word aspire. And we took ages to decide on the name. And I've got it's in a drawer next to me somewhere, but got a huge like vision board that my sister-in-law, she's in marketing, and she kind of sat down with us and went through and kind of, I think it was probably a bit OTT, but yeah, kind of think of all the things that you want the business to represent and all the names that you associate and words that you associate with that. And then, we ultimately stemmed on something that was all based around aspirations and aspire. And then with a...
Is it a made-up word, Aspiron?
I'm pretty sure it is. I don't think there's similar words, but we didn't go down the route of, there's quite a lot of cybersecurity firms that are very kind of security focused names, and we wanted to avoid that just to allow us flexibility if we ever wanted to kind of do different markets. The reality is we won't ever do that, but at the time we were thinking, well, let's keep that open without kind of defining the brand by that.
So the vision at this time was build a business that you and Joe, you know, could enjoy and would reflect the people you were, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we just wanted control over like commercials as well. So there was quite a lot of friction over us wanting to be able to do things with clients, or like there were certain situations where I would have kind of done something a bit different for a client that was there was one thing in particular actually that was like the client asked us to qualify a candidate for them, and they said, look, you can have the candidate if you think they're any good, because we've had them come through directly, but what fee would you charge on this? And like my immediate response would have been, oh, we'll just like discount it in half. Like if you've given us the candidate, then we run the process, then we'll just do 50% of the fee if that candidate gets the job. And I remember the conversation internally, it was like, oh yeah, not like 2% off the fee. So from 20% to 18%, it was just that feeling of like, if I was the client, I wouldn't then respect Oliver for doing that kind of discount. And there was just a few things like that where we just wanted to be able to run things our way and make the decisions.
Yeah, and you wanted to build relationships your way. And look, I think you get to that point in your life where you've done enough for other people and it's about your own journey. Mm-hmm. So what was it like starting in summer 2022? You got a 3-4 months. Oh, how old's your baby at this point?
5.5 months.
Right. So yeah, my baby's 4.5, nearly 5 months now. So I can picture it vividly. What you're going through. What's that like starting a new business at that time? Because, you know, I'm so excited to finish work now, and you know, I'm trying to steal those moments with her, and I am working hard, but I'm probably not working the same level of hours I was in 2017 when I launched Hoxo. So how the hell did you get through that?
The first 6 months when it was just Joe and I, like looking back, were the easiest 6 months in the business so far. So we're just over 2.5 years old now as a company. And yeah, the first 6 months of just Joe and I being pretty much solely remote, they were the simplest times. And work in the US market meant that the mornings were kind of ours. So yeah, being able to spend lots of time with her and do things in the morning and then just basically work late just seemed to work really well. And it obviously changed a bit when we then had an office and had staff, because it wasn't just our time is completely our own now.
Where did Joe live? Was he local to you?
So he was originally from Kent, but he actually moved down to the Bournemouth area. Met a girl in a house party, and he's now engaged, house, and a daughter with her, and relocated.
So did he go as soon as the business started, or was he local to you when the business started?
No, he was like 40-minute drive away. So we met up occasionally. So he moved whilst we were still employed by Iceberg.
Right. Okay.
And, so yeah, then moved down to the south coast.
And you decided to go with Recruit Hub, right? With Edmund and the guys.
Did.
What made you use those guys to start the business and take, I guess, a bit of support and not just go completely on your own?
Yeah, I think it was appreciating what we didn't know. So, like, we were all right billers. We were all right at doing the client acquisition and then the actual recruiting piece and managing processes. But it was just a realization that all the back office piece, the technology piece, the legal elements, like we had zero exposure to any of that. And like, I think we would have made it work without Recruit Hub, but they definitely made it easier. Yeah. And like just the sheer amount of time that they save, like setting up Vincere or like certain like technical issues, setting up email domains, just like all these admin tasks that they just completely take off your plate. So yeah, if we were launching again for the first time, I'd definitely do it again via them.
Yeah.
It's useful.
And in terms of support and guidance, just being able to ask the network questions and know that you're not alone, I guess that'd be a nice feeling as well.
Yeah, some useful people in the network.
Yeah, the portfolio's massive now. I think they're like over 100 recruitment businesses, which they've grown so fast, but they're doing something.
Yeah,
doing
we're going to big old Slack channel with them.
Yeah, they're doing something right. Good on them. So you said the first 6 months was the best or easiest time ever. What did you guys generate revenue in that first 6 months? Were you profitable and billing?
Yeah, we did over $600,000 in the first 6 months. So Joe won a five role retainer. He actually won it the week before the business was like legally incorporated. So we had a really, really good start working on a fantastic project from day one. And then we kind of, build a bit of a business around that. It was all in the automotive security space. So there's a company out in the Bay Area in San Francisco that has like robotic driverless cars delivering like Domino's pizza and groceries to people's doors. And we were building the security team that were responsible for kind of hacking into and then securing those. So really, really interesting project. And then we did some other stuff around like the automotive security space at the time as well.
So $600,000 in 6 months. What impact does that have on your life when you 6 months earlier you question probably whether you should do this? You got a young family. Like, Take us back to that moment when you're reflecting after 6 months and you've achieved so much.
Year one, we only paid ourselves, it was less than 40K in year one. So we kept the vast majority of it in the business, like hardly any of it came out. So it didn't change anything. If anything, it was just that kind of comfortable, well, more than comfortable cushion in the business that, like, right, we're doing something right. We've now got the cash to start growing. But yeah, personally, it didn't change a thing. Like, we were living more frugally than we were before.
But did you doubt whether you needed to grow the team, or just, and did it go through your mind that maybe you and Joe just carry this on for a period of time and get to a certain amount of million each and then you're done?
No, not at the time. That thought definitely came across my mind at the start of last year.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, oh, fuck it, it'll be easier if we just went back to the first six months and was just Joe and I. But that was a pretty fleeting thought.
How did the growth plan go then? So you get that period of time, just you two. What was the strategy around growing the team?
Yeah, so we opened a Crawley office. Mainly because it was near where I lived, and there's quite a few recruitment firms around there. There's a few big successful recruitment firms, and then there's a ton of kind of smaller ones like us. It was pretty, I mean, we were pretty conservative with what we were aiming to do initially, but we hired, so we started with two hires. They joined us on it was like the 3rd of January, 2021. One of those hires left 9 days later. So that was a bit of what have we done wrong to not support this person? I think that, It turned out that she was actually one of my neighbors. It was my neighbor's sister, which we found out like a week later after she'd joined. And the reality is that it just wasn't the right thing for her. Yeah. But that was definitely a bit of a shock. And there was then like a lot of doubt in terms of what have we done that's made this situation happen? And then we hired a few more in the first 6 months. We finished year, well, our full first full year, full calendar year, on it was eight people, there was then it was at the very end of that real boom market, so kind of 2022, where everyone was absolutely flying, and I think a bit of ego hiring definitely creeped in, because like every recruitment firm was growing, every recruitment firm was hiring significantly and on face value kind of doing incredibly well, and I think we then brought some people in that shouldn't have made the cut. Our bar definitely lowered when we were bringing people on at the start of last year, and then obviously what happened to the market happens. The tech market went through a lot of difficulties. It was pretty clear that we'd lowered our hiring standards when we were.
I've just checked LinkedIn, so I think you got your dates wrong. Actually, you started it in 21, right? Not 2022. You said it was you quit in September 21, and then you started in January 22. Was it?
So we launched the business in June 2021.
21. That's it. So it's September 2020 that you decided, right, we need to plan this now, right? So yeah, we're a year earlier than we said earlier in the podcast. I just want to clarify that if anyone's thinking these dates don't add up. So 2020 pandemic, you start the next year, and that makes sense because the boom time was from mid 21 to sort of end of 22, wasn't it? It was incredible. So you start hiring.
Yeah, that's a good time to launch a recruitment firm.
Yeah, and amazing. Sure. No wonder that $600,000 was there. But no, it was a great time. I'm interrupting today's episode to give you a message from our brand new sponsor. Now, this company are called Untapped, and everyone knows that Hoxo, through this podcast, I've explained that we've built our team internationally, heavily in South Africa, okay? And I get questions all the time from clients and people who listen to the show, like, how have you done it? What was the process, etc.? Well,
I've partnered with a business that can ultimately reveal it all, share it all, and help you do the same, right? Because look, it's been a tricky year for the sector, and many of people through uncertain times have had to streamline operations. However, you know, accessing low-cost resources internationally has proven to be a bit of a cheat code for some people, including Hoxo. But anyone who's tried it, like us, it's very difficult, a lot of work, process to get it right. So this company, Untapped, are one of the hottest companies in the market. They've helped Hoxo, they're helping our clients. And they specifically look at companies in the UK, US, Middle East, and Australia transition to using remote individuals and building full offshore sourcing and recruitment solutions. So they source talent pools from places like South Africa and the Philippines. And we're talking about experienced talent here. We're not talking about graduates with no experience. This is like people with 3 to 5 years recruitment experience and integrate them into your UK team. Okay. So they work remotely, but plug into your UK team. They put around 3,000 candidates per month through an intense 4-stage interview and online testing process to find the top 1% or 30 people and secure these people for work with recruitment agencies like yourself. You know, all candidates are benchmarked against UK competency frameworks and the way in which you would hire in the UK. So we're not, again, we're not talking about cheap for the sake of being cheap. We're talking about international experienced people just living in lower cost locations. So it's a really simple process if you want to work with these guys. You pay a deposit to kick off their search. They then provide a candidate shortlist in 14 days. And then you can put people through your own process to hire them permanently, or there's a freelance option. So if you just want to try before you buy, they can employ them. You pay a daily rate and it's a freelance option. Untapped are totally transparent with all the salaries and fees. But you know, we're talking about, you'll still pay about 70% less than a UK equivalent in that role. So it's a no-brainer to complement your existing team to handle surplus demand and ease cost pressures. You know, if you're not using this to rip up your business and rebuild it with global resources, then you're probably going to fall behind eventually. So due to demand and capacity, they're only operating on a waiting list right now. So if you want to be part of their waiting list, go to www.tryuntapped.com. Okay, www.tryuntapped.com and check out their information. Make sure you say that you listen to the RAG podcast, because they'll do you a very special deal as well. Right, go and check them out. Back to the show.
So you're growing the team in 2022 then, and you said there was challenges there. That was, what was the plan for people? Like, so there's so many ways you can skin the cat. You can do resources, working for your jobs. You can do 360 from day one. How did you guys approach the onboarding and the plan for new people?
Yeah, so we always wanted to hire 360 consultants. That was always the goal. And I think, again, like coming down back to what 2022 was like, it was in some ways a great year for people to get their first roles in the recruitment industry, because it was definitely easier to win clients than it ever had been before.
Yeah.
But then in a lot of ways, it was the worst possible time for someone to get into the industry, because I think it was a slightly like inflated misconception of what the job and what the industry was like. And like we've been speaking to kind of a lot of recruiters that over the last few months that joined the industry during that time, and there's quite a few that quite quickly became the top generators and the top billers in their teams or their companies, despite being a year or even less in the industry. And the moment last year started, it's then that realization of actually this is harder than I thought it was going to be, and then the cracks start to show because clients' expectations were lower. Now we're, I'd say, closer to a normal market. Yeah. I think it showed who can kind of really recruit versus who.
So what did you see then? You saw people come in, probably hit the ground running quite quick, but then as the market fell apart, they fell with it? Like, what was the symptom?
I wouldn't say they fell. Fell was an over-exaggeration, but I think it was that realization of this is harder than it was when I joined, rather than getting easier because they're getting more experience. So yeah, there was a lot of lessons there. And especially in kind of Q1, Q2 last year, 2023, there was a lot of lessons in terms of what we were doing wrong versus what we were doing right. And
could you share some of those
meeting
lessons?
Structure. Yeah, I mean, even like how we were, I guess, managing mine and Joe's time. So we kind of moved to this model where it was kind of on Joe and I to bring in the bulk of the business and then pass that down. And then that just caused issues in its own, because we were then like, well, we're not building 360 recruiters if we're doing that, but then we're still got the expectation that they're in client conversations and trying to network and bring in those new logos. So that was a key one. And we've changed a few things, like just the way certain targets work or certain split systems work, just so that's a bit kind of clearer, and the weight on kind of the big earnings is very much on the 360 business now. People still earn good money by doing delivery, but if they want to do really, really well, then the biggest commission structures are accessed by doing 360 billings.
Which was a bit like your first 3 months at Iceberg, wasn't it? Like, there's like, you go and do the 360, you're going to earn some money.
Yeah, and we'll promote you. So,
but you go,
yeah, but that seems to be working.
We all go through that though, that you get successful, you build a team, you've got the relationships, you've got the gravitas, you've got the jobs. If you sit there and fill them all yourself and you've got these people struggling, like it's a catch 22, isn't it? You want to give them the work to free yourself up to go and find the work, but then you're not developing them. I think, again, it goes back to believing in a model, a bit like working from home or working in an office. I think you've got to pick something and stick to it. And over a period of time, it'll come. If you're constantly changing the model, I think, especially for younger people and, you know, inexperienced people, it's a really difficult place to be.
Yeah. And there was definitely a lot of changes or U-turns on certain decisions, whether it was certain things we were training on or whether it was meeting structures and when they were happening or certain KPIs. So yeah, the team will have definitely gone through a bit of, like, I don't know, I guess that typical kind of startup firm where something might be decided on a week before and then a week later it's, no, we're completely scrapping this. I mean, you've probably had similar things in the early days of Hoxo as well. So yeah, it takes a certain person to be able to be successful in an early stage business with founders that haven't done it before. That can just kind of roll with the punches and be like, well, I'm just going to go with this and make it work regardless. So yeah, like kudos.
For some people, it's so, for some people that is literally crippling, and for others it's inspiring and it's energizing. Like, I can empathize so much with that. I mean, I'd say the one bit of feedback when we started doing employment satisfactory surveys a couple of years ago was stop changing shit. And I was the guilty party, probably the most out of that. Even my business partner, Emma, would be like, just slow down a bit, will you? Like, we've just started this and you're already talking about that. And you do, you doubt yourself. You hear someone else doing something, especially in a group like the Recruit Hub or whatever, like when you've got access to other people and the way they're doing things and you listen to shows like this.
Yeah.
It can spark you to try something, change it. And it.
Well, I remember one of yours, actually. I've even got I even bought the book after it. It was you saying that you've just discovered Traction.
Traction, Gino Wickman. That was right at the start of the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you saying, oh, the team are probably rolling their eyes and thinking, oh, fucking hell, he's changing everything again.
Well, we still use that. We still do that. We still do it.
Yeah.
And that's been 2018, I think we started with Traction. And we started the process of the level 10 meetings and we got the software. And we still have a level 10 every Monday, 90 minutes. We follow the same structure. We don't do everything in it. I don't know if you did it any of it yourself, but like there's some really simplistic stuff around rocks and scorecards, and we do all that. Like, we still do it, and it's worked really well for us. Mm-hmm. But there's some of the organizational chart stuff we don't do. But I wouldn't mind, actually. That's a good. I might read that book again. I might go back on it. See what
I never read it. I bought it, and then it's sat on my bookshelf.
I should be on commission. Ashbury Ashes.
Yeah,
a lot of people bought that book.
Book salesman.
So last year, 2023, has been how would you describe it? Because like you say, the market took a dip. There's no denying. Like people across the industry had a tough time. How would you describe your experience?
It was hard, but having gone through like deep dark lockdown, it was not like, oh, we've never been in this situation before. Yeah. Like we'd been in situations where all hiring had been paused across all of your clients and where offers had been rescinded and taken away. Not the same level of like tech layoffs, but furlough was similar kind of situation where the people that you were dealing with were just not there. So I guess we were kind of set up well enough that Joe and I had felt a similar kind of market before, albeit it didn't last as long. But we got through it. We ended up 5% down. So we had pretty much flat revenues from 2022 to last year, which given what was happening, we were actually fairly happy with. Like I remember having when the Silicon Valley Bank crashed, Friday afternoon UK time, and Joe and I had a bit of a like crisis meeting over the weekend thinking, right, we've got potential that every single one of our outstanding invoices is not getting paid. Every single one of our active roles is wiped off the board. So what are we going to do to transition? We sat down with the team on Monday to go over the plan. I'm not sure how kind of seriously they took it, but I guess it was kind of that preparing for the worst. And then the reality is that they got bailed out and it was all fine. But that could have been really bad in kind of May, April time, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And you guys started with my boot camp, I think, at the start of last year, was it? Or was it the year before?
Yeah.
It was last year.
Yeah, January.
Start of 2023.
January we started. Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember looking at your stats were just growing like wildfire on LinkedIn. So talk me through the experience of, why did you decide to invest in LinkedIn? Like, what was the reason you thought we need to learn this stuff?
Well, I wish we'd done it when we first launched. And I wish we'd started our podcast when we first launched. Because, I mean, you've got in the security market, there's a couple of really prominent like names on LinkedIn. You've had Stu Mitchell on, him being one of the main ones in there. We're in a slightly different area of security to Stu. We're vendor focused, but still the same industry. And it's where most of his business comes from. So that's obviously one of the drivers is just thinking, well, how can we maximize our visibility? But yeah, it was good. The team all took to it well. Everyone's team stats have gone up. It was a good year to kind of be posting and kind of giving out advice and almost being like that sounding board, just because there was a lot of stuff to relate to with all the layoffs and all the tougher times that candidates were going through. So I think there was a lot of good reception from candidates in terms of, oh, these are people that we can kind of feel like we can trust and relate to.
And how would you say the system has become part of the business now? Because even the first thing you said to me today was, oh, I've dropped off a little bit, but it's still, you can tell it's ingrained in your DNA now. Mm-hmm. So like, how do you guys go about keeping that alive?
I think it's pulling stuff from your everyday client and candidate interactions. I think as long as you've got that mindset of, right, that's an interesting point, other people might be interested in hearing about that, let's forge a post around it. I think that's what most of the team have been able to take on board really well, is just being able to create the organic content from their everyday experiences rather than following. So we don't follow your really regimented structure. But the underlying kind of knowledge and mindset has allowed them to still do really good content.
Brilliant. And what impact would you say it's had on the business?
In terms of actual inbound clients that have proactively messaged us, we've only ever had one. That turned into an $82,000 project with three hires. So there was that came from it. So that was immediately ROI. But if you were to try and track like the indirect benefit and ROI, it would obviously be huge. And it kind of ties into the podcast that we run. We worked out last year that it was about $320,000 of NFI came directly from clients that have been won from our podcast. Yeah. So that's a really good revenue stream for us, and something that we're kind of doubling down on this year as well.
Exciting. Love it. So you're coming to the end of year three, is it? Is it year three in June?
Yeah, June will be the end of year three.
So if we're going to look back on that three-year journey then, what would you say are your... For anyone else who's thinking of starting a business today, let's give us your top three things that you'd say you've got to think about, or you from actual practical learnings. What would people take from it?
Just go for it. if you want to do it, then just do it. Stop umming and ahhing around it. It's also. Because companies like Recruit Hub and there's others out there, because they make it so easy to launch a business, I think there's definitely this potential feeling that it's the whole thing is easy, and it's not. Whether that's I wasn't completely on my own because I've got Joe, but whether it's we now don't have the infrastructure or support of an actual recruitment business behind us, or even just the colleagues and teams that you've been used to speaking to day in, day out for months or however many years, that can definitely play into it. I know a lot of solo founders that definitely talk about like the loneliness of it. but that's where companies like Recruit Hub are great, because you've got a network that you can tap into.
Yeah.
I think not having the expectation that it's gonna be easy. But as long as you appreciate that, then you're not setting yourself up for failure. You know your work's gonna be cut out. And then I'd say just try and reinvest back into the business, whether it's getting out on international travel, whether it's investing in different tools or tech stacks or marketing events in your industry. So that's something we do a lot of. We invest a ton into travel. We've got events that we're sponsoring this year. We hold a lot of dinners, a lot of roundtables, all to get out there in front of the industry and develop our name in the VC community as well.
So it's about starting quickly when you've got the desire, just get started. There's plenty of support out there for you. Don't expect it to be easy. Like, expect the challenges that are going to come your way, but then and then invest back into the business. Yeah. Don't spend every penny on your life that comes in. I mean, I know a couple of businesses that they have zero balance sheet because they live, they're bringing in 100 grand a month and they're spending 99 of it. And it's like, you're not going anywhere. Whereas you guys are investing back into the people, into the business, into the training, as well as the travel, client development. It's awesome. So moving on to now then, you've recently took the plunge of moving yourself down to Bournemouth alongside Joe. So talk us through, we mentioned it offline before we started the show, but like, why did you do that? What were the symptoms in the business that meant you move your whole family and two kids, two dogs, wife to a complete 2 hours away?
So some of it was just personal. We, almost every weekend we were driving down to the beach. So we thought, well, why don't we just move to the beach instead? Yeah. So that was, there was definitely a big kind of personal element of just wanting to change there. But then there was no friction from it. And I don't think there would have been in the short term, but I think over time, Joe and I being that far apart, but still having an office-based company at the time, I think that would have brought some issues, whether it was a year or whether it was 3 years in the future. I think there definitely would have been some form of things that we would have needed to try and overcome from that.
You were in an office with everyone in Crawley and he was just working from home on his own. Is that how it was?
He was coming up, it was minimum once a week. He was coming up sometimes two, occasionally more than that if there were specific things that we were doing in the office. But it's like his 4 hour round journey.
And your hours are US hours, so everyone starts
doing US hours. Yeah, so it was probably like naivety from the start from the two of us thinking, oh yeah, we can make this work. And I mean, I say that we were making it work, but it was definitely that feeling of we missed being together, and we'd always worked with each other day in day out at Iceberg, and we always bounced off each other really well in terms of like cross pollination of ideas or clients or candidates. So it was an element of missing that. And we just thought, well, we can tie this all in. Joe had literally just had his second daughter and he was on paternity leave. And I remember calling him and just saying, quick idea, how would you feel about shutting the Crawley office and reopening one down in Bournemouth and we move? And it was just this kind of complete... probably feeling of elation from him.
Oh, wow.
Thinking, this is great. I don't have to do that drive anymore and we can be kind of back together. So, yeah.
What did it mean for the people in the team?
So that was the difficult part is we had, at the time, we were a team of eight. So six people based in Crawley. And we had to tell everybody that, well, we're shutting this office and we're moving 100 miles away down to the southwest coast. So that was difficult. And there was there was a lot of nerves kind of telling the team that we were doing that, because there was obviously going to be fallout from it. You're telling people that what they've been used to working in and the environment isn't going to be there anymore. So that was tough, but it all worked out. It was the time when the market was, I'd say, at its lowest last year as well. So we had, in total, kind of three or four people from that team due to the move are no longer with us. But then we've got Tanya and Brody, who have kind of lived through thick and thin of decisions and U-turns and are still with us today and doing really well remotely. So once the move officially happened and the Crawley office shut, we had our best quarter in terms of NFI per head that the business has ever had. So there was a bit of a culture shift, but it's panned out well.
So what's the current way of working then? Break it down. How do you currently, have you got an office? How does everyone work and in harmony at the minute?
Yeah, so we do, the people that are near the office do 3 or 4 days in the office. So Wednesdays, Thursdays are normally remote. Tanya and Brody, who are the fully remote guys, they come and meet us once a quarter. So we had our first kind of queue where it was delayed because there was a couple of holidays in January, but we had our Q1 sales kickoff 2 weeks ago. And we do everything by Zoom. All internal team meetings are by Zoom, even if like 80% of the team are in the same room, because there's that. If I was sitting at home and there was loads of people sat around a table in person, and I was just on a screen, you'd feel left out. You wouldn't feel included. So that's something that we'll always do. As long as we've got remote people, we'll be doing remote Zoom meetings to keep that involvement. And I think there's just trying to celebrate all the successes publicly, or whether it's on Slack, whether it's on the morning stand-up meetings, is just making that really conscious effort to be all inclusive, whether it's fully remote people or whether it's hybrid in office people.
So you've got everyone works a few days from home, so everyone's got a bit of that remote. It's like, it would be different, I think, if you had 5 days a week office Bournemouth and fully remote. That'd feel very separate. And how yeah, I suppose if they're both in Crawley, do you think once a, could you not do once a month rather than once a quarter that they could be in the office and come down to see you guys? Is that a potential?
We thought about it. When we originally made the decision to move, we initially thought, oh, well, you'll come down once a quarter, once a month. But it's just, I don't think there's a need for it. So if we're doing a much larger, much more significant quarterly SKO, then I feel that is more important than them just popping down once a month.
Work in an office.
And almost doing it for the sake of being seen and being in that office. Whereas if we have a very thought out, planned sales kickoff, then it becomes a lot more meaningful doing it that way. And then we've got the international trips that happen kind of sporadically through the year as well. So we see people then. There's conferences that happen in London. So yeah, we'll see each other more than just that once a quarter.
And in terms of the future then, is it growing around the Bournemouth area? Is it that'll be where you attract talent from?
Yes and no. So we're not particularly interested in hiring green recruiters right now. The people that we bring on board now need to bring experience, and whether they're office based or whether they're fully remote will depend on how much experience they bring. So we're very keen to be able to attract fully remote but also very highly experienced cybersecurity billers to the business. But then, like, we've got a chap starting next week who lives about 2 hours away, has a year and a half cybersecurity experience. So he'll be in the office twice a week. We'll pay for his accommodation. And then the rest of the time he'll be remote. But that 2 days with the experience he brings is enough for us to really help develop and influence kind of how well he performs. So, yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how it works out over the next kind of 2 years and how well we've aged.
And has there been any impact of you two being together? Have you felt any noticeable change of being around Joe more?
Yeah, it's great. He's I don't know if you've met Joe, but he's got an infectious ADHD energy that you can't really avoid. So yeah, no, it's great. Yeah, it's like missed being around him. So hopefully,
yeah, it reminds me of me and Amma. He lives in the Cotswolds now and I'm in Sheffield and our business is remote, right? So I've seen him on Saturday. We probably try and do a meetup once a month, but it's not every month. And it is tricky, like, because we work together and live together for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I do miss that. But getting him to move house and me to move house now after we've both just got mortgages a year ago, I don't think that's not happening anytime soon for us.
Yeah.
But what my plan this year, so Hoxo went on a massive change last year. Like we started the year with 38 people and finished it with 14. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like a terrible year. Now in reality, there was partly that was down to underperformance in certain areas of the business, but strategically, that was because we didn't want the business to be that anymore. Like we didn't want to be a marketing branding agency that delivered loads of work for people. We wanted to double down on the investment in training and coaching and build that academy program. So we didn't need the people we had. But we've now got this wicked team, which is 14, based around the UK, South Africa, Europe. And we can meet, like we're all meeting in, pretty much all of us are going to be in London in March for the expo. Be flying people in from South Africa. We're going to meet again in the summer. I'm going to be in London once a month now. I'm thinking of bringing the podcast back to being in person as well. That's a plan for Q2. I feel like this year we've got this energy. It's got this like light and energy about it that I kind of feel from you in a way. It's a completely different set of circumstances, but similarly, I don't know. I don't really know what this year will bring, but I'm super excited by it.
Like the team, if you compare the individuals that are in the business today compared to where we were at last year, there's less people, but each person they're just such a higher caliber. So
yeah, well rounded.
We had these goals of finishing 2023 on like 16 heads that we wanted to finish the year on. And now we don't have any headcount plans. We've got no plans to reach X headcount, because then I'll feel like we're, especially given the area that we're based in, we'll be forcing hires to hit a headcount goal. Whereas we can hire people tomorrow if they fit the right criteria, like the chat that we've got starting on Monday. He's someone I'd been speaking to for a while. He messaged me randomly on LinkedIn a few weeks ago. And was like, yeah, great. This is going to work. Let's get you on board and things are going to fly. So yeah, there's this kind of quiet excitement, I think, from the team that it's going to be a big year for everyone.
What are your goals then? So what are you, if it's not headcount, what are you trying to achieve in 2024? And if we brought you back in a year's time, what would we be hopefully saying happened?
Yeah, so we've got our NFI figure. If you want to know that, then I can I can share it. So we've got a 1.95 million USD NFI figure, which we believe we could hit with the team that we have today.
How many people?
So
have
with
got
the
today?
New people that are coming in, 5 in total, including Joe and I. So.
Yeah, that's a $400,000 head GP. I mean, that's a pretty cool year. If you got that, that'd be a pretty epic year, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it's all dollars, so it's not pounds. So all the figures we talk about are dollars. But
what is that in pounds? About 1.7.
About 1.6, yeah, 1.6. Ish. Depends if Liz Truss comes back and crashes the pound. that was a good time to transfer dollars. But yeah, so we genuinely believe that we'll be hitting that and exceeding that, especially with the people that are coming in. We've got a lot of goals around the podcast and the events that we're going to be holding and sponsoring. We're almost solely vendor focused now. So the whole business completely transitioned from technical security to go-to-market vendor security about 9 months in. And we now have a whole business development strategy around kind of developing the VC relationships and we're launching our first managed service agreement. I mean, by the time this podcast goes live, we might have announced that or it'll be very, very shortly coming. So that's really exciting. And just getting embedded with the VCs even deeper than we are at the moment will funnel us a lot of business.
Well, Ollie, that's an hour and 3 minutes, which is usually where this show wraps up. I just want to say thanks. Like you've come on the show. Your business is relatively young, less than 3 years old. You're doing it incredibly well. We've had life changing moves. It's a familiar story for many. You know the reasons you started the business, and I think it will give a lot of other people confidence that if they've not already started, they can. And if they have started, that, you know, they're in a similar boat. So well done. And I'd love to get you back on. If we can kind of mentally book that in for early next year, let's see. And hopefully it'll be in London. We'll be sat down in a studio and do it.
You have to come down to the beach. We'll get deck chairs and Coronas on the beach with the camera set up.
I'd love to do it that way. The only reason, I mean, I just don't think I'd be around my family very often if I went to everyone else's locations. But we never know. That might be part of the plan for the rag. Mate, thanks so much. Good luck with everything, and we'll get you back on in the future, okay?
Awesome. Cheers, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, as always, for listening to today's show. I truly hope that you got value from it. Honestly, it's the only reason I take time every week to ensure that my audience, you guys, future and existing recruitment owners, you're learning from each other to make this industry that I love so much stronger. And today's episode is brought to you by my business, Hoxo. I'm the CEO and founder, and we're on a mission to help brand recruitment agencies and their people better. I want to help people have the tools to stand out in the most competitive markets in the world. We're currently working with over 350 recruitment agencies and 5,000 of their consultants right now, helping them to build their personal brands, to consistently win more business, attract talent, and just become that go-to recruiter in the market. Now, we do have a huge coaching program, but a lot of people don't know we also manage the brands of a lot of founders, and we can do the rebrand of that company organizational piece as well. So if your recruitment agency
either needs help to look and sound exactly how you want it to, or your leadership and consultant level need to get out there and drive more traffic back to that website, to the business, and start using LinkedIn to generate more revenue, then you should definitely be reaching out to us. If that sounds of interest, please do visit www.hoxhillmedia.com or drop me, Sean, a personal message on LinkedIn. I love hearing from RAG listeners. I would love to talk to you. Look forward to it. So I'll see you again next week with another episode. Catch you soon.